Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Phil Bork in a moment, but first our play-by-play call of the day on the Flyers Network with Tim Saunders.
Over the line, the Flyers dish it around in behind the net. David Kasha with Frost coming out left point. Here's Sanheim with a shot. They score! And David Kasha has his first National Hockey League goal. It comes with mom and dad in the building against his brother Andre, and the Flyers take the 2-0 lead.
Play-by-play call of the day. All right. Now, the holidays, of course, I mean, here is a countdown a week away. I'd like to make a very strong recommendation. You're going to love this book. It is Phil Bork's book, and this is tremendous because it is tales from the locker room, the ice, and the broadcast booth. He has the total perspective. Phil, welcome. It's great to have you back on the show.
Hey, Steve, great to talk to you, too. Happy holidays to you.
Hey, happy holidays to you. Okay, so what was the toughest part to write? The broadcast booth, the ice, or the locker room?
probably the locker room, because there's a lot of stuff, as you know, that's supposed to stay in the locker room, and so I had to call a couple of buddies and let them know that I was kind of taking the curtain back a little bit and letting people inside. And, sometimes people, they've moved on with their lives and they become dads and husbands, and they don't want those stories told. So I had to kind of walk that tightrope a little bit. But I got the blessing from those particular former teammates. And so, yeah, as far as the broadcast booth, that was the easiest part to talk about my relationship with Mike Lang. But, what's interesting about the book is I do take you behind the scenes of some of the shenanigans that went on, as a team and as myself. I've lived an interesting life, but I guess you have to have a lot of highs and lows in your life to write an interesting book, right, Steve?
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. You know, it's also, how much did it mean? I'm going to get to the highs and lows in a moment, but what did it mean to have somebody like Josh Yoey, who's been a real friend to this show over the years, to have him as a collaborator on this?
He was great. He really did a great job. It's not easy to just sit down and turn a microphone on or a recorder on and have somebody tell you, 2 hours or 3 hours of stories. Like, that's really the way this book was written, was, I told the stories and then Josh would take my words and put them on paper. And I thought he did a great job of, embracing the emotions in some of those moments. And it's not easy. He's never written a book before. I've never written a book before. So as challenging as it was, it was a bit of labor of love, if you will, between Josh and I, but we had a great relationship as friends before we even sat down to write the book. But he really did a great job and really taking my words and emotions and putting them to paper.
One of the highs is winning the Stanley Cup against the Minnesota North Stars, but it had a rather inauspicious beginning to the series. And then at the end, Minnesota, which had already had the Twins winning the World Series in 87, sort of let out that what the parade route was going to be. What was the ups and downs and the emotions of playing in a Stanley Cup final that eventually allowed you to have a parade?
Well, that was interesting about that run in 91 is if you look at all four series, we lost the first game of all four series. And, that usually is not good, especially when you start getting deeper in the playoffs. But, we were such a resilient bunch. Also, we go out on the ice for game number three, and we're looking on the bench, and no 66, no Mario Lemieux. And that, wasn't a huge shock to us, but it was a bit of a surprise in the Stanley Cup final. We end up losing that game, and then after that game, when Minnesota went up 2-1, I think it was an innocent thing, but this is where you have to be so careful, because you never know when it might bite you on the backside. It's a couple of their players were like, daydreaming a little bit. Oh, yeah, they were asked a question by a reporter, simple question, that, we think about that. It would be great. But then they elaborated a little bit. You know, they said, well, do you ever think about getting a Stanley Cup ring and how big of a diamond you'd want in the ring? And they went, yeah, we think about that all the time. Well, we took that, and it was fuel for our fire. We took that and really used it to our advantage and against them. And I remember clearly in our locker room, Steve, saying, you know, the heck with these guys. You know, we put that article right up on the board with some hockey tape, and we used it as fuel for our fire. And then we end up winning three straight and winning the series in six games.
Amazing. Now the downs. The accident, I want to say it was in Utah. Does that sound right?
Right on the Utah-Arizona border, yep.
Yeah. What did it take for you, and what did you find out about yourself that you didn't know before that allowed you to at least get back to the league from that?
Well, just a kind of quick snapshot, I was free climbing, and I was up about 150 feet up a mountain by myself, no ropes or anything, and ended up falling four stories straight down, broke all my facial bones, fractured my skull 3 inches, and broke my neck in five places, and had to get life flighted to Flagstaff, Arizona. What did I find out about myself? I don't know, maybe just I was tougher than I thought I was. How much I really loved the game. I knew I loved the game, but to get myself back in the gym, that year was actually a lockout, so there was no NHL until January, and so that was a blessing for me, because when I got back to playing again in January, that's when everybody else started again. I was in the best shape of my life, which the doctor told me when he came in the next day and looked at my MRI and thought I should be paralyzed. Never mind, you know, I should have died on that mountain. He said, just because you're in the best shape of your life and because of that, you were able to endure that fall, and you should be able to bounce back from it. So I just found that, you know, nothing was going to stop me. You know, people said you got a broken neck and you broke your head and you broke your face. I was still going to find a way, no matter what, to get back to play. And I played six more years after that and finished my career in Germany, and, you know, with no regrets at all.
Incredible. What did you find out about people around you? Something like that happens. You find out about people around you, like really who is your friend, who is close to you.
Yeah.
Do you find out that?
You find the bad, too, Steve. That's the other part.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I can tell you a lot of good stories of people reached out that you haven't heard from in a long time. And sincerely, when people say, hey, if you need any help, I'll be there. Some people just say that because they feel like they have to say it. There are some people that I thought were my friends, and I really found out how much they are my friends. And I guess everybody in life, you could probably count on one hand how many people you could call at 3 o'clock in the morning and be, you know, 3,000 miles away and say, I need your help, and they say, I'm on my way. I found out who those people are. But the other part was the people who I thought were my friends, you know, I didn't hear from at all. You know, later in life when I was retired and I reached out to them, that, you know, those people really aren't your friends. So fortunately or unfortunately, we are judged by the company we keep, and I think that moment in my life helped me really open my eyes on who my friends were.
Well, if that's the case, I'm keeping great company right now, so I'm doing pretty well. you had to reinvent yourself and be a broadcaster. What did it take? And I know Mike meant a lot to this, but what did it take for you to then take the knowledge and translate it into snippets over 2 hours and 15 minutes a night?
Yeah, well, real quick, I went through 3 years without working after I retired. I couldn't find a job. That was the most humbling moment in my life. Oh, anybody's been out of work, that you realize you go 3 years without a paycheck. I don't care how much money you made in life. It's a cold slap in the face of reality and what real life is all about. And I thought I had made enough connections, but obviously I didn't. But fast forward to your question. My first year as a broadcaster, I thought it was going to be good because I played the game a long time, and I thought I knew what I was talking about. But being a broadcaster, I really had to roll my sleeves up and dig my heels in and get back to working at this craft like I did as a player. And so that first year, I didn't think I was very good. I didn't really know how to summarize my thoughts and put them in short little snippets, as you mentioned, and get in and get out and have a flow with a play-by-play guy and have that chemistry and be prepared for really anything that comes your way. And so it took me a while to figure that out, but once I was able to take my player's work ethic and apply it to broadcasting, things went a little bit smoother. And then, of course, as you mentioned, I I got together with Mike Lang, the Hall of Fame broadcaster, and we became better friends outside the booth. And I think that translates to more chemistry inside the booth.
You were always a player that had to work so hard at your craft to be really, really good. That meant a lot of preparation. You were always known for great on-ice preparation. What did it take for you today to have great off-ice preparation so you could be a really good broadcaster?
Yeah, great question. There's a saying that goes, you know, when preparation meets opportunity, that's when success happens. And that's,
yes,
there's no truer statement in our whole universe, really. It's something I try to live my life by. But what did it take? Again, it was trying to find out little stories, because that's my job as a color guy, to bring color, to bring stories, to bring, you know, something that you've never heard of before about a certain player, bring that to light and apply it to a broadcast. So that's what it's always about, telling a story every 2.5 hours that we're in the booth. That's my job, is not only to tell you the how and why of things that happen instantaneous, but to have, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 little stories sitting there ready to go, that when Mike brings up so-and-so player, bam, I've got the story ready to go to talk about, you know, his mom is a, I don't know, she's a doctor in Sweden, and she, you know, performs heart surgery, stuff like that. I mean, there's so many in the internet, you know, it's great for being a broadcaster, because you can unearth all these stories in a matter of a click. But it's all about being prepared and having those ready to be told. And sometimes you only have 10 or 15 seconds to tell those quick stories.
You also have the great perspective, as would Mike, obviously, because you played with Lemieux, Yager, Kevin Stevens, the great Brian Trottier, who had the Stanley Cup championships, not just with the Penguins, but with the Islanders. And then broadcasting guys like Crosby, and then, of course, last night Malkin got his 400th career goal for the Pens. What's it been like for you to lend that kind of perspective? Because history does mean something, because not that people are looking for comparisons, but you can at least give context to what they're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. I tell people all the time, never one day do I take it for granted. I mean, why us? Why in this sleepy little town, southwestern Pennsylvania, where have we had Lemieux and Yager and Crosby and Malkin and Letang? I mean, all these superstar players come down the turnpike to us, and that just makes my job easier and makes it fun to call the games. And that's why I still have so much passion for not only for the game, but for the black and gold, for the crest, for the Pittsburgh Penguins organization. And I'm proud to represent them as a broadcaster and do a lot out in the community. And I think that's part of it too, that you got to continue to give back and have that connection with the fans and be sincere about it. Don't do it just because it's something that you're supposed to do. Do it because it's in your heart and it's the right thing to do. And so it's all about being part of the family. It's really a family environment. And that's why they've won 5 cups in, what, 27 years or 28 years. It's because of it starts from the top. You know, it starts with Mario. It starts with ownership, Ron Burkle, and just trickles all the way down. And so it's just very, very lucky, and it makes me even hungrier to do my job, because I know that the standard's been set for a long time.
And you know, what's interesting, though, is this franchise for a long time was always on the brink of not being in Pittsburgh. In a lot of ways, Mario saved it. I mean, you had to live through it. How remarkable is it when you go, when you walk into that building, and I've done basketball in that building, so I haven't done a hockey game there.
Okay, sure.
But I've done basketball in there. It's an incredible building. What's it like to walk in there knowing that the Portlands and the Kansas Cities were out there trying to get this team before Mario saved it?
Yeah, well, I have this little saying I use all the time, and some people understand it, some people don't. Those who don't, I'll explain it. We are the Penguinis, and I kind of say a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because we don't do anything the easy way. You think of everything, all the championships that we've won, you know, all the players that have either had a sickness or an illness or an injury. It's just year after year after year, nothing goes smooth for us, and it's not supposed to be that way. So when I walk into that building, I guess I do probably reflect, whether it's for, you know, 2 seconds or 2 minutes, of just what it took to get to where we are today. And I go back to, I joined the Penguins in 82, a couple years before Mario. We stunk. It was basically, you know, you could pick any section in the Civic Arena to sit in, and then they had people wearing paper bags, because they didn't want to be on the 11 o'clock news and their buddies see him at a Penguin game. So there's been a lot of heartache, but it kind of mirrors my life. You know, there's been incredible highs and incredible lows, and I think that's where the parallels are. But that makes when you do win and you've gone through all the crap, Steve, it makes that winning even sweeter.
Phil, finally for you, and this is one of those softball questions, but I'll close it out with this question. What is it like for you to look at either Amazon or a bookshelf and realize that you, Phil Bork, wrote a book and it's on a shelf?
It's surreal is what it is. It still doesn't seem real because I've had so many people, you know, you're sitting at the bar having a beer with your buddies and you're telling them certain stories, things you've gone through, and I'm sure this has happened to you too. They go, you should write a book someday. I'm I'll get around to it.
Yes,
but when Triumph out of Chicago actually contacted me and heard some of the stories that have happened in my life, I went, okay, it's time. My kids are a little bit older now. It's time. I've kind of gathered all those thoughts, and I'm ready to put it out there. And lastly, you know, the one part of the book that probably will tug at your heartstrings the most is my relationship with my dad. My dad and I had a very abusive relationship. He started out verbally. It became physical. Mm. We went 10 years without speaking. He was not part of my two Stanley Cups. So it was kind of a cleansing for me to get that out, put it on paper, and hopefully it can help somebody else that maybe is going through a tough time with a parent or a family member.
Yes, I know. Unreal. But by the way, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Travel Books, it is a number one bestseller. If these walls could talk, stories from the Pittsburgh Penguins, ice, locker room, and press box, Phil Bork, with a lot of help from Josh Yoey. You've been great to us on this show over the years. We always look forward to talking to you. You are one of the best, and you do a great job on the broadcast with Mike and also with Josh Getzoff. We appreciate it very much.
All right, Steve. Appreciate you, too. I enjoyed our time together. This was good hockey.
You bet. Thank you. The outstanding Phil Bork. This is this book is going to be, again, holidays are a week away. Seriously, seriously consider it. It's a terrific book. We'll come back more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us on the show today. Whoa. Boy, was that great talking with Phil Bork?
Absolutely. That's some really great stuff from all different perspectives. I mean, when you get a guy like that that's played the game, that calls the game, I mean, the amount of stories you can tell just based off that is insane in itself, let alone everything else he's been through.
Yeah, the part about his father at the end, I mean, you know, I mean, if that doesn't grab you, nothing will. Because I mean, it's I don't know what possesses somebody to be abusive, whether physically or verbally, to a child. I mean, I don't know what possesses somebody to do that. And it takes a lot of fortitude by the person who's been abused to somehow keep their life going, to then achieve great things. And Phil has achieved great things. He's a Stanley Cup champion. He's an outstanding broadcaster. I mean, he's been in that Penguins broadcast since 2003. But, you know, he's out of work for 3 years. I mean, it's just, you talk about the ups and downs. And he talks about walking into arenas, like when he goes into the new arena in Pittsburgh. And he looks around. He's like, you know, like the appreciation he has for it. And I've told this to people many, many times. And I don't really know if I really talked about it on here at all. But there is a point in every game that I do where, for example, I'm at Beaver Stadium. And I can look out and there's this area between the south end zone and the east stands where I can look through and I can see a good portion of Mount Nittany. And every game I do, at some point during a commercial break, I will look out at that and I'll think how incredibly fortunate I am to be doing this. Every game I do in there. And when I'm doing a basketball game, I'll think the same thing. How fortunate am I to do this? You know, State College Spikes game. I mean, Mount Nittany's right in my face over the center field wall. You think to yourself, how fortunate am I to do this? And you can tell with him, and as he said, when he goes into the arena, he'll think at some point, how fortunate is he to be doing this? Well, I could relate verbatim as to what he was saying because I think the same thing in every game I do. You know, maybe it's in the first quarter, maybe it's in the third. But I'll find myself looking, and I'll be looking through that opening between the south upper deck and the east stands, and I'll think, wow, how fortunate are you?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to be with you on this day today. Be careful out there. Snow squalls are rolling through the area. We've already had a 20-vehicle accident on Interstate 80 at mile marker 202, about 3 miles from the Mile Run interchange on I-80. So far, we've had no word from PennDOT on the state of the highway. We've had no word yet from hospitals about the extent of any injuries. We just know there was a 20-car pileup. Zion to Pleasant Gap, 2664. 64, of course, leads into I-80 at mile marker 173, I believe.
That is correct.
And I've driven it so many times, Matt. I've got
Since my freshman year at Clarion, I know every exit known to man now on 80.
I feel like I have all these exits memorized in my mind. 224 is Danville.
Yep.
232 is Buckhorn.
Yep.
All right. But regardless, 64-26 between Zion and Pleasant Gap, which is at the Y. Pleasant Gap, all the way, Y and Zion all the way down. That was closed for a period of time. I guess 192 also had some problems along the way because of the snow squalls. You're going along, it's fine. I'll give you a good example. I was driving here to the Sunbury Motors Studio to do the show today, and it was snowing pretty hard. All right. That happens, it's fine. And then 5 minutes later, I'm in bright blue skies. And 5 minutes after that, it was snowing hard again. That's the kind of day we have. Now, once everybody gets settled, or maybe you're in your car this evening, 6 o'clock to 7, we are going to have Santa Claus. Talk to Santa again tonight on the show. Decades old tradition here. Really cool. So that is coming up tonight. It really all began just after Thanksgiving when Santa started in this one individual older than the normal child that visits Santa, asked to have the interim tag taken off of him. That's a different story. Okay. Stop laughing, Catrillo.
I'm just sitting here doing what I got to do.
Yeah, you're laughing again. All right. A national signing day. And then back to work for basketball, by the way. And Penn State will play Friday night. Now, we'll have Santa on, but they do play Central Connecticut here Friday night. Central actually played today. Played Dartmouth. Game that started at 11 in the morning. Dartmouth 176-60. Yet this has been a game that has bedeviled Penn State over the years. Well, I can go back to Bruce Parkhill talking about a game like this. And always made Bruce uncomfortable right around finals time. And then one year, when Penn State made the tournament in 2011, do you realize this game was Maine and Penn State lost by 10? They made the tournament that year. They lost to Maine in this game. Well, the last 2 years, Penn State lost this game. Ryder on a shot at the buzzer, a three. And then last year, at Alabama. Alabama, I don't know. Play well for a while in that game. And so Patrick Chambers and I will get into that tonight in the pregame show as well, even though I know you won't be able to hear it, but we'll talk about it. But he is, they're ranked 23rd, which is great for the program, great publicity for the program, can translate into other areas, but it doesn't win you the next game. In fact, it just makes you a bigger target. It's the way it is. Now, that comes with the territory. That comes with the territory. All right? But it's great to be talking about a ranked basketball team. But people have said, you haven't sounded excited or euphoric over it. And I said, to be honest with you, Dick and I mean, let's go back to day one. Matt, Dick and I have essentially expected this.
Exactly right. I know Dick in particular has thought very highly of the amount of talent returning if they could stay healthy, and so far they have.
So far they have. Now, you got this game, then they get a break, then they come back and they play Cornell. Cornell, by the way, will play at Hartford coming up Sunday. And then they get another 6 days, and then they go to Philadelphia and they play in the Palestra against Iowa, and that kicks in now the bulk of the Big Ten schedule. 18 consecutive conference games starting January 4th. They've got Iowa, which has played very well to this point, and then at Rutgers, which has played very well to this point. So that's what they have coming up.
Bucknell will actually be playing at the Palestra themselves against LaSalle on Saturday the 28th.
That's awesome. I hope they enjoy it.
They'll get a chance to do that.
Yeah.
They'll be at Siena this Saturday.
Right. I'm a little busy on the 28th.
That's right.
So, Nathan, I wish you all the best, babe. But don't count me among the viewers because I'm a little busy. You know, I'm looking at the broadcast lineup for the game. And Brad Shamu does a great job. We being the home team, so Penn State, when you're in the New Year's Six, it's not every bowl. Like, take, for example, the Citrus Bowl. Penn State was the home team last year. It's only because they alternate every year. This year, whomever the SEC team is, which is Alabama will be the home team. Just alternates back and forth. In the New Year's Six, if you're the higher-ranked team, you're the home team. That's how it works. So Penn State at 10 is the higher-ranked team. They're the home team. That means broadcasting-wise, we get the Cowboys broadcast booth. Okay? Which is where Brad Sham has operated at Texas Stadium and now in this booth during his 41-year career. The irony is Brad Sham is actually also doing the game on Westwood. He just can't do it in his booth. Like, I'm, I feel like apologizing to him when I see him. I'm like, see, I'm sorry, Brad. I feel awful here. I feel like it took your space. Today was National Signing Day, 27th signed by Penn State. I remember there was about four or five to go, and James came back because there's a sequence. They have everything timed out as to when they can, when they're talking to each of the recruits. A lot of it's based sometimes on schedule. Every once in a while, a schedule gets bumped. For example, there was one today that had a test, and when his test was over, he was going to do his announcement. Well, it turned out then he got a pop quiz in a class. So they had to wait until 12:15. But other than that, all the letters were signed. And I remember James looking at me, he goes, oh, drama-free. Well, that is the way you want it. And it's considered by almost every recruiting service to be a top 12 class. Good positional balance in this class. And what was really neat to watch as they were doing this is you could see that they were also doing several things along the way to then lay the groundwork for the next recruiting class. Found that to be interesting today as well.
By the way, locally here, Steve, for Southern Columbia at 6 o'clock tonight, they're going to be announcing all of their national signing days. Of course, Julian Fleming to Ohio State, Gage Garcia to Michigan. You have Cal Halliday to Michigan State, Max Tillett to New Hampshire, and then the quarterback, Preston Zachman, who also played linebacker, will sign with Wisconsin as a linebacker. It's a lot of Big Ten signees here for locally from Southern Columbia.
By the way, Southern Columbia, I think they're trying to get them to go to, 3A? And they don't want to do it, right?
They are, yeah, because there's two rules with that, with the amount of transfers you get, and then there's success points. So the success points, I think, are there for Southern, if I'm not mistaken, but they don't have enough. But they don't think they had the transfer qualification to move up, so they're going to appeal, and looks like they'll probably win that appeal and stay at 2A for next year.
Okay. Just something, a nice local note. We're a program that has been, so to their credit, so dominant. Congratulating them on the state championship. So that's been great. Now you lock back in on the Cotton Bowl, which will be a week from Saturday. We'll have it for you on News Radio 1070 WKOK. That's going to be a noon kickoff and a 10:30 airtime for the game. I do not believe that Matt McGloin can join us for this because he's right now into the thick of the XFL. Now, the XFL training camp, Matt told Jack and me that they're going to bring everybody down to Houston. I want to say January 3rd? Something like that. January 3rd? And because of that, we're not going to have him for the bowl game. He was a great addition for us this year. I thought he added a lot, and Jack and I would constantly we'd go to him for something, a perspective on a quarterback or how the offense was playing or what the quarterback is seeing or not seeing. And I thought Matt added a ton to the broadcast. It's going to be interesting to see if we can retain him. All right. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The suit at our holiday party decided to jam. Kind of scary, don't you think?
I've never seen him jam, but that'd be an interesting sight.
Cotrillo yells out, "Dude, how about some holiday tunes?" And that's what he cranked out. Like, ever since the 297 night, it changed him as a personality. He was so wide open and congenial, and now it's just, I think that music, the bitterness. Oh, wow. Okay, we're actually, 48 hours from now, we'll be actually in the thick of bowl season there, Matt.
That's right. Yeah, the first
games
are coming up on Friday.
Bowl games will get started, yep. Yes. Let's get it rolling here.
And let the competition begin.
Now, did you vote? I'm trying to remember. Did you vote?
I did not.
Write your picks down.
Okay. I'll get caught up on that.
Yeah, why don't you write your picks down? Just take 5 minutes, which is about all the caring I put into it. And I mean, just to see. Might as well get you involved in this thing.
Okay, yeah, I'm good with that. I'll take a look and I'll have them ready.
Yeah, come on. This will be good. You know, have a little fun with it.
Just off the top of my head, I do like Penn State a lot against Memphis.
Good.
I just think their talent level, number one, is going to be too much for Memphis to handle, though they are playing well. And I think just the change of head coach, you know, the instability there for Memphis isn't going to be quite right for what they have to get ready for.
It's not just the head coach part, but also the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But I think so far Penn State practice-wise is off to a really good start for this. By the way, three Oklahoma players have been suspended for the LSU game.
Oh,
how about that? And let's see here. Let's see now which three players they are. Let's see. It wasn't immediately clear if the players, starting defensive end Ronnie Perkins, running back Ramondre Stevenson, and wide receiver Trajan Bridges, would also miss the national championship. Well, if they're going to play in the semifinal, their odds of winning getting there. But you're talking about starting defensive end, Ronnie Perkins.
That's huge.
That defense is already mediocre to begin with.
Yeah. You want to face Joe Burrow with that, your top defensive end? I don't think so.
Yeah. And the now the good news for them is that Lincoln Riley did say that tailback Kennedy Brooks, who's the second leading rusher on the team, I mean, he gained 976 yards this year, was going to be available for LSU. He had an upper body injury in the fourth quarter of the Big 12 championship game with Baylor.
And Lincoln Riley isn't going to meet with the media again until the Sooners arrive in Atlanta next week for the Peach Bowl, and he didn't even say when he could be able to address the suspension. So the actual reason for the suspension still is unknown, according to ESPN.com.
Right. So Stevenson's been the backup tailback. He had 48 yards rushing against Baylor in the Big 12 title game. Bridges is a freshman from Carrollton, Texas. 7 catches, 82 yards, and a touchdown. Okay. Yeah. But the big one is the defensive end on a team that already struggles to play defense. That is not good.
And I think Oklahoma had a whole heck of a lot of chance against LSU to begin with, but now you're going to be down. You're without your defensive end. Oof.
Brutal. Brutal.
Definitely going to have to play all hands on deck of ball control. And even though that probably won't even be enough, obviously, even if they had their top guys in.
Right. Penn State's signing class, 24/7 Sports has Penn State 12. ESPN has Penn State 14. Excuse me, I'm sorry. 24/7 Sports has Penn State 12. ESPN has Penn State 12. And Rivals has them 14. 11 of the signees will be early enrollees. Cole Brevard, Nick Dawkins, Jaden Dotton, Tyler Elsden, Keziah Holmes, Enzo Jennings, Joe Johnson III, Theo Johnson, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Bryce Mostella, and Fatoma Moba will all be early entries. Penn State also had four recruits who were the number one recruit in their respective state or province. Cole Brevard from Indiana, Jair Brown from New Jersey, Theo Johnson from Ontario, and Malik Mega from Quebec. They did well in terms of going into, didn't they? They did well going north of the border. 13 players from within 250-mile radius of State College. Four signees coming from more than 1,000 miles away. Penn State had five signees from Maryland, four each from Pennsylvania and Virginia, two from Florida, Michigan, and New Jersey, and one each from Indiana, Massachusetts, Nevada, New York, Ohio, Texas, Ontario, and Quebec.
Yeah, and Theo Johnson.
Yeah. Yes.
That's my favorite signing out of them all. He's going to be a stud, I think.
It's interesting, though, that I talked with Tyler Bowen the other day, and he is really high on Theo Johnson. Then he looked at me and said, but don't sleep on Tyler Warren. He said he is not a social media guy. So a lot of people don't know as much about him. Interesting. Now, this is a good class. I mean, I like this class.